those who are self-publishing or considering self-publishing, you have to remember that you've got to take all of those steps yourself. Sit down with the content editor and go through those changes that are going to change the structure of the book, the content of the book, how chapters lead to each other, how they, you know, fulfill the genre, how they work for readers, the story well told.
Welcome to Literary Gumbo 2.0, the reboot of a video program I co-produced between 2010 and 2017. Each episode explores the world of writing, publishing, and book marketing. I'm your host, Lisa Engel, the right angle to help you write and sell your story. Sit back and enjoy.
I'm here today with Jennifer Silva Redman, an author and editor. She is very excited about helping people achieve their publishing goals. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hey, Lisa. It's great to be here.
Yeah, why don't you let us know how you got into this writing and editing kind of wacky world?
Sure. Well, about 35 years ago, I was an actor living in New York City, which means, of course, I was waiting tables. And I came back to San Diego to visit my family, ran into my old boyfriend, Russell. We decided to get married, like you do, over a weekend. And the next thing I knew, we were taking off on a 26-foot boat for a 1,000-mile voyage to Cabo San Lucas. So that's the subject of my new memoir, which is coming out in September. And during that year, I discovered that I still loved writing, which I'd been doing all my life, and that it gave me just as much, there were as many rewards and joys to be found in performing on paper, as it were, as opposed to performing on stage. And I also enjoyed the fact that I could do it from anywhere, which of course is still true. Right now I'm on my boat in Washington and we're doing this. So both of us work from the boat still 34 years later. So yeah, well, I really enjoyed working on other people's stories and books, and I enjoyed working on my own writing. So in that first year, I really kind of became a writer. And as soon as we got back to San Diego, you know, with our subsequent voyages on our boat, I ended up working for a publisher and worked my way up over a period of years to being editor-in-chief of Sunbelt Publication in San Diego, who I still work with. And so I was working on other people's books, editing other people's books. And also I've worked with the Southern California Writers Conference and San Diego Writers, Inc. for many years, teaching people about editing their own work and also how to work with an editor, because I think there's a sort of a mystery about what editors do and whether people really need an editor. And of course the answer is yes, you do.
Well, how did you go about, so you had to get an editor for your own book. So how did you about that?
Well, luckily I was, my book is being published by Rebooks of Toronto, Canada. So I had a publisher and she assigned one of her editors that she works with, Deanna McFadden, who was wonderful. And I think part of the thing that was so challenging is that I had been working on the book for 25 years. I mean, off and on, I'd been working on polishing a piece. I had some of them published in just individually, and I would work on them individually, but I had just kind of recently, maybe 2 years ago, put it together in a form that I thought worked as a book. And so I started working with Deanna and she said, oh, I love this. I love this. Now you need to tell me more about this. And you need to explain better about this part of sailing, or you need to explain more about the geography of Baja, or you need to explain or flesh this out more. So she would definitely tell me things that, even though I'm a structural editor, I could not see it in my own work, which is very common. And there was so much that was in my head that I was filling in and I would read it. And that's something that's very common, especially in memoir, but it happens in fiction of all genres as well. The author knows what they're saying. They can envision the world or their memories of what happened, and they're filling that in. And the editor's there saying, no, it's not on the page. It's just not on the page. It's in your head. So now you need to, you know, flesh this out, bring this more to life, make this more active. And those were the things she was telling me, all the things that I tell authors all the time in my day job. So it was fun to be on the other side of it, but also quite a challenge.
Did you have any squabbles?
Not really. I think there was one time that there was one chapter that was a lot about music, which is a big thing for both of us. And she kept saying, there's no story here and it doesn't have to do with the rest of the book. And I kept saying, no, but I love it. And it's the old kill your darlings. Eventually I had to say, she's right. It really doesn't belong. So I was able to take little elements from it and add that to other chapters. But it really wasn't, a part of the story arc, the larger story arc, nor was it as a chapter that rewarding to anyone but me. And so I had to learn that would had to go. But basically it was she and my editor Rebecca both got the book right away. They got, you know, what I was trying to say with it, and they got, you know, they just loved it. So that was a huge help, of course, when somebody's saying, I like it, now just give me a little more of this or a little more of that. And then once I would flesh things out, of course, we'd go back in and shape them so that they fit, you know, they became chapters that led one to the other and told a cohesive story in the end, you know, so that there was, you know, a structure to it. As I say, that I can do that with other people's writing, but apparently I couldn't do it with my own very well. So
that must have been interesting, being on the other side. So now that you've done that, are you going to change anything when you go work with other authors?
You know, I think that she and I work together a lot like I work with authors. I mean, I try and find their strengths and play to those strengths. I think every book, like every human, is its own entity. So you can't look at it as like, okay, I'm coming in with my template of what I do. You know, there may be a sense of the way you work with people, but basically each book is going to tell you how it needs to be told, if that makes sense. It sounds a little woo-woo, but every book needs to be told in the way that suits that cast of characters, as it were, the setting, the genre, the, you know, who it's directed to, the readership. You know, you could write the exact same book in the same setting for different audiences and it would become a completely different book. So how I work with people is very much read it and think about, is this coming across as well as it can? And I like to use the metaphor that people, you know, are broadcasting and I'm in there trying to tune out the static, trying to make their voice come through as clearly as possible. I don't want anybody to be writing in my voice and I don't want to come in and say, this is how you should write. It's more, I get what you're doing, but this isn't coming across, or this chapter is getting in the way of the progression of the book. It needs to go somewhere earlier or later. You know, those things that get in the way of the clear story that you're trying to tell. And I mean, I'm not even talking about copy editing at this point, which is a whole nother thing, but I'm talking about content and structural editing, where the pieces of the puzzle need to go together in a certain way to tell the story effectively. And of course, as you say, being on the other side of it, I would go, oh yeah, why didn't I see that? But once again, it's very hard to work on your own work because you're filling it in. I'm filling it in with hundreds of days that went into that, you know, those 40 chapters. So lots is left out, but it's all in my mind and in my memory. So it's very hard to read something without all of that coming through and kind of confusing my, you know, diluting it in some way that somebody else is reading it going, I don't get it at all. So, oh, okay. I've got to make that clear. So.
And then, but then there's the copy editing too, because yes. I was my last podcast guest. She was saying how a client of hers brought her for publicity. A client brought her a book that he said was perfectly edited, and mm-hmm. she found a couple of mistakes in there. So she sent right. it to, an editor that she had worked for before, and she said she found like 800 errors.
Welcome to my world. When I read books, and I just read one, and it was published by Simon & Schuster, so it's not a schlocky publisher. It was full of errors. I mean, from wrong placement of commas to literally the wrong word, you know, poor instead of poor, or peak instead of peak, or, you know, I mean, just like any copy editor would have caught them. And that was definitely a challenging part of this for me, because I'm so incredibly picky, you know, and of course I want, as an editor, I want something out there that's going to represent me really well and not be, you know, full of errors, of course. So that was really quite a challenge. So we went back and forth quite a bit. And even like 2 weeks ago, when it was going to the printer, I was still finding things that were bugging me, you know. So I would go, can I just change one more thing? I read the audiobook for it in a recording studio in Seattle. And while I was reading, I was finding things that were still wrong, little errors. And I was going, oh my God, this is terrible. I'll never stop finding these errors. And she said, don't worry, you know, if something's really bad, we'll fix it. And if not, we'll fix it in the next printing. And if it's like, oh, I don't want something out there that isn't 100% perfect, but that's the nature of a collaborative art form. It's never going to be perfect, but you want to try and get it as perfect as possible. So for people who want to self-publish, they have to remember that they have to put on all the hats. So, you know, I like to say a book never happens slow enough for a publisher or fast enough for an author, because authors are already, I want the book out. I want to be doing events. I want to be showing it to my friends. And the publisher is going, slow down. We got plenty of time. Let's make it perfect. Well, in this case, I was the one saying slow down, and she was the one saying we want it out in September. So that was interesting. But for those who are self-publishing or considering self-publishing, you have to remember that you've got to take all of those steps yourself. Sit down with the content editor and go through those changes that are going to change the structure of the book, the content of the book, how chapters lead to each other, how they've, you know, fulfill the genre, how they work for readers, that story well told, right? But then after you've done those two or three or four rewrites, however many it takes to get it the way you want it, then you've got to go through that process again with line editing or copy editing to make sure that each sentence works as well as it can with just the right words, and that each sentence within the paragraph belongs and comes in the right place, and that each paragraph comes in the right place on the page, and that every page, you know, works within that chapter, because every chapter is its own little story arc, or it should be, so that it leaves you wanting more, but also satisfies you. So that's something your content editor would do, but that your line editor, or in some cases, copy editor will do as well. And then there's the final copy edit for all the little tiny commas versus semicolon, or period versus semicolon, or dash versus quote, or all of that persnickety things, you know. And there's so many good copy editors out there. There's no excuse to not have it as good as you can get it.
Well, I liked what you said about the audiobook, because that is, I have spoken to people who publish their own books, yep. and that seems to be a really good way of catching things. And
yes.
Matter of fact, the one indie publisher I talked to, he said that's his final edit, is mm-hmm. he goes and records his own audiobooks, and right. and that will be his final edit, because right. he'll catch more errors.
Exactly. Yeah. Gail Carline, who you may know, she was been at a number of conferences in Southern California. She's written 7 or 8 or 9 books. I can't keep track anymore. She's got a couple of series. They're all wonderful, different genres. But she says every time she records the book, then she listens to it with the printout in front of her. And so that was exactly what I did as well, reading it out loud once just for the story, then the second time with the manuscript in front of me to make sure, am I saying exactly what I want to be saying with those words, and stop and start and start, you know, so that you get that flow. Even after all those processes, to be reading the audiobook from my computer manuscript, you know, on my computer screen, that's when I saw some things that I hadn't seen before. So I would say not once, but twice reading it aloud with the manuscript in front of you. So incredibly helpful. And it was great. Also, I read it out loud that first time for the flow to my husband, who was not only there, so he was able to say, wait, but he could also point out some things like, that's confusing, I'm not sure what you're saying there, you know, so that was really helpful too. So if you have somebody whose arm you can twist to listen to it, that's such a helpful tool.
Yeah, because, and these days too, and also listening without looking at the paper, but listening to it is also something I recommend. And you can do that just by, you know, hearing it flat too. If you have your computer read it to you, Word will, you can tell it to read your manuscript. Yep. And just listening to that flat AI voice reading it will help you. And then,
yes, because something isn't helping you to sound more dramatic or more interesting, which a narrator always tries to make it sound more interesting. And I found myself even doing that with my own book, like delighting over a word because I didn't love it, you know, but AI won't do that. That automatic robot voice will point out all those little things you would miss. You're right.
And then when you're, you know, some people might not want to read their own audiobook, but if you don't, I've been recommending to people that they do take their chapter that they think is pretty much there, take it and try reading it out loud and recording it as if they were going to be producing their own audiobook. Mm-hmm. That way they can see if it's like, oh, well, those two characters sound a lot alike.
Right.
Oh, I need to make these guys sound different. Yeah,
exactly. And that's something that, you know, having worked on editing many books, but as well in screenplays as well, one of the things that we're always told is make sure I can tell the difference when someone is speaking, even before the dialogue tag, even before it says Bob said, I should know it's Bob talking, just because of the way he talks. And it can be very tricky when you're writing, like there are certain people, Aaron Sorkin, everyone loves Aaron Sorkin, and of course he's good, but you'll find, especially in earlier manuscripts, you'll find that a lot of the screenplays, I should say, are the people sound identical. They're all witty and they're all insightful and they're all incisive and they're all kind of cynical and they're all kind of wry. And it's like, who is this person? I would not be able to tell in lines of dialogue. So it's something we have to definitely point out when people are writing a lot of dialogue, is that how can we tell who's speaking? You know, obviously you're going to say he said, she said, or Mary said, Bob said, but even without those tags, how can we tell from the words they're using who's speaking or how they're saying it or some gesture that goes along with it? You know, he ran his hands through his hair, exasperated, and then along, you know, if we know this person is the person in the scene that's stressed out in a book or in a film, then we can say, oh, that's going to be Bob, you know, so. Hints that help us to figure that out. But you're right, we have so many tools now that there's no excuse for people would say, oh, I don't know how to do that, or I can't read out loud, or I don't like the sound of my own voice, or whatever. You know, there's so many tools you have now to be able to do that.
Good point. Well, one of the copy editors that I worked with on the book that I put out, she's really good about catching overuse of words or maybe clauses in a sentence that need to be rearranged and all that kind of good stuff. But one of my kryptonite is those homophones. And that seemed to be something that she didn't seem to catch, all of them. But what I ended up happening is I had some beta readers and, I had one beta reader that was really good at catching homophones. Right. So, do you also recommend beta readers?
I definitely do. And actually with most authors, I would say do beta readers before you bring me your manuscript, because a lot of times what will happen is you're writing and you're rewriting and you're rewriting it again, and you're moving things around it, and you will forget that your hero's name was, Adonis when you started out, and then you changed it to D'Artagnan or something, and you've literally forgotten and you haven't been reading it out loud to point that out. So your beta reader will go, now wait, who was D'Artagnan now? And he's, right, I named him that. Or I always love to tell the story of a memoir where a woman was talking about her life and she had this teenage son, and then halfway through the book he just disappears. She never mentions him again. And I'm like, teenagers are pretty insistently part of your life. I know that they don't just disappear. So, this is something you have to bring this up. What happened to him? Where'd he go? What was going on at that point? It's things, or in a novel, somebody has a dog in chapter one because it's useful to the author for some reason, and then they forget that the character has a dog. Like, they don't just disappear, if they're off at the dog sitter, that's an issue too. Make it clear, fill them. But beta readers are great at that, and they're great at pointing out those things that you did because it was handy to you as an author, and saying like, yeah, that's not going to fly. So that way, when you come to me or to any other content or structural editor, you're not wasting our time on that low-hanging fruit. That gives us the opportunity to look much more deeply and look at the not just the meta story, but the little layers within them, to make sure that it's as good as it can be, because I'm not having to worry, now who was Tom again? Because before his name was Ben. So those things can be caught by your beta readers. I mean, if it was somebody like Gail who does all of that great work before she brings it to me, that's great. It's your choice how you want to do it. But to me, beta readers, your alpha beta readers, your first beta readers, could be three people that and love and they support you. That could be your first readership. And then once you've done the rewrite based on that feedback, you could go to like another level of beta readers, people who maybe you just know from a conference, they're other authors, but maybe they're not your best friend or your mom or your spouse or your honey pie, somebody who's going to be a little bit tougher with you. And then once you've gone through those passes and done the rewriting based on their feedback, that's when you want to start spending the money. You don't want to spend the money on, I'm just done with my book, I press the end, send it off to somebody, make it good, because you're going to spend more time and money, because more time I spend, the more money for you. So, all of those steps, like you say, of using the people in your circle and finding those people, at writing groups or events or conferences is hugely, hugely helpful to you. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I totally agree. I mean, I've written a novel and put it out.
And it's very good.
Oh, thank you. I'm just saying that I have mistakes. When I was proofing the audiobook, it was told from a male point of view, so I had somebody else narrate the audiobook. Yes. And when I was listening to it, I realized, oh no, I changed one of the names. And and then I'm like, it's going to be easier to have him redo one scene.
Those sections.
Yeah. So
before you change the name. Yeah. I was just telling my husband about your book because he loves dialects and stuff. And I said, she did it just right. So many people either do too much or too little. And I thought you did it right on. I could hear that voice in my head. So now I'm interested in hearing the audiobook. So maybe I'll get to hear it again and he'll get to hear it for the first time. That sounds great. Yeah, it was such a cinematic story.
Well, thank you very much. I okay, here's some advice I kind of need, and I'm sure it will help other people. I recently spoke to somebody who called about, you know, publishing advice as far as, are the shorter works, you know, should I put them together or publish them separately kind of thing. And I said, okay, well, do you have your team lined up? Do you have your editors and cover designers and stuff? And he says, oh, well, I don't need an editor. He says, he said, because he had put out other books in the past, he published other books with his own press. And he said he didn't need an editor. I've run across that before. What do you say when in that circumstance?
You know, I have heard everything from, I actually heard an author say, I bring out my books on eBooks first, and I let all my readers find the errors for me. And then I bring the book to print. And I just thought, what? Why would you want people reading your work that is not in a finished state? That makes no sense to me. I mean, I can unequivocally state there has never been a book that I have read and published by anyone that I have not found an error in. Now, if that can be true at the level of the big five publishers where they're hiring people and paying people good money to edit these books, how do you possibly think that an author who is so close to their own book can be able to tell not only the things that are structurally off or confusing or could be better in terms of the structure of the book and content of the book, but also to be able to see every word for the first time? Because once you've read a book a couple of times, that's exactly why I oftentimes will do a content edit followed by a line edit, but I never do a copy edit for the same author. And I tell them, I would rather you go to somebody else, and I'll recommend people to them, because the same thing you talked about with rain versus rain. She pulled on the reins, spelled like a queen's rein. And I'm saying, I wouldn't see that because I've already seen it a couple of times. My eye may just go right over it. Whereas a new copy editor is going to come in and say, oh, she means reins like a horse's reins in this case, you know, or peak and peak or any of those. And I see them over and over and over again in published books. We don't see it because we know what we wrote. We know what we meant. So we're just seeing what we meant to write, not what we actually wrote. So for somebody to say that they can proof their own work and know that it's error free, it's unbelievable to me, literally unbelievable that that could be true. Because having tried to proof my own work, I know how difficult it is. I mean, you could read backwards and all those little tricks, but so time consuming, and you still will not find the things that are on another level of, you know, content or structural, because once again, you're filling things into those blanks that come from your knowledge of the characters, or in memoir, your knowledge of your actual life. You're filling those in, and the reader can't do that. The reader's just going to read what's on the page. They're going to judge it. And why somebody would want a book out there for decades that could have been so much better with a couple more $1,000 and a couple more months. It's just such a waste of time and money to have spent all the money on all the other pieces, like you're talking about, to put it out there and then have it not be as good as it could be. It just seems a shame.
Well, although you are preaching to the choir here, I think you have really proved that people, that writers need editors. Yes. No matter what, they need editors. Yes. So yes. How do you recommend people go about finding editors?
Well, there's a number of different ways. If you're at a conference, obviously talk to people who've already published books, you know, who have self-published, have their own team. I love that you said that. I say having a publishing team. I like to tell people, don't self-publish, publish with a team. You know, find those people that are good at what they do. And I find it funny that a lot of really good editors are not really good at marketing themselves. So sometimes you'll look for quite a while and then you'll hear somebody say, oh, you don't know Lori Gibson. You know, she's the greatest editor. And Lori, you don't even have a website. But, you know, for example, you know, You know, that's just something that happens in life. And all of the best book editors and designers that I know, many of them don't have websites and don't promote themselves very much. So they just get word of mouth. And that's good if you're really that good. That proves that you really are. So I think that there's, you know, there's a million different ways to do it, but you know, certainly get out and talk to other writers who have successfully self-published if that's what you're going to do. And or, you know, talk to people, you know, talk to editors. I mean, I always tell people they can certainly go to jennyredbug.com and you can see, you know, people that I have talked about, but I'm also happy to, people can, there, my email is on there. They can shoot me an email. And if I'm not available to do content or other types of editing, I always recommend other people. You know, I know there's websites out there that will talk about editors in a specific city or in a specific region, but there aren't too many that are just like the greatest editors out there, you know, because also there's a lot of people out there that charge an awful lot and they're not better than people who charge less necessarily. They're just live in New York or Chicago or LA. And so they've noticed that they can raise their prices. And so they do. I mean, I don't begrudge them that if they end up with happy customers. But I haven't seen like a Yelp thing for editing. I mean, that would be great if somebody started doing that. But I definitely know a handful of editors that I'm happy to recommend to people. So, you know, without cluttering this up with reciting a list of names, you know, there are definitely lots of places to look, you know, in your particular hometown, wherever that is, you know, start reaching out to your local, you know, in, of course, in Santa Barbara, the Writers Conference, San Diego, Southern California Writers Conference, Los Angeles. I think there are a number of groups that, you know, specialize in, and, you know, ask your writer friends. Certainly on Facebook, I see people do that all the time. They go, oh, I thought I was going to work with so-and-so, but she's busy. Anybody knows somebody great? And, you know, they'll get five or six names right away. That's what social media is really good for, the hive mind thing. You know, help me out here, people.
Yes. So your book is coming out in September. What are you doing to promote it?
Well, I'm going on podcasts. I just did a couple of podcasts last week. I did an article for a cruising magazine that specializes in people that sail, and there'll be another one coming out in a couple of months. I've been doing my own blog on, I joined Substack, which I don't know if all your listeners are familiar with Substack, but it's basically a software setup where you can go on and create your own newsletter that is then delivered to people into their emails. And then people can click onto the site from their email and be able to comment with the other people that are on the Substack. So it's been really, really cool. And it's, if you just Google Honeymoon at Sea, you'll see it pretty quickly. There isn't a lot of everything else in Honeymoon at Sea has to do with someplace you're going to, you know, buy a package to Fiji or something. So you'll be able to tell quickly which one is my Substack. And I transferred everything from my old blog over there. So there's a whole lot of archives about writing, things that I talk about with editing and writing tips. I'm also writing an editing book. So that's happening at the same time. But I've just been doing all kinds of things. And as I said, doing the audiobook was a very exciting and a somewhat terrifying experience to do. And also just been working on all the little marketing things. Hopefully I'll be getting the ARCs of the book. I haven't even had advanced reading copies yet. I've been sending people PDFs, but luckily I've had a lot of people review it. A lot of people say a lot of great things. So that's been very helpful to me to be able to put that out there. And for about 5 hours the other day, I was the number one new release in Hispanic and Latino literature on Amazon. And I hope that, I wish they had a Baja California subject line, but they don't. So, well, they have to work on their keywords, I think. But it's been a great deal of fun, you know, talking with people that were on my mailing list for years and years that are like, oh, you wrote a book? I didn't even know that. So trying to rattle the bushes in every way. And I'll be looking forward to planning something at a bookstore soon. And then, as I said, I'll be down in San Diego and Southern California in the beginning of next year with the books, doing the Southern California Writers Conference and some other writers' conferences and have the books with me. So that'll be very exciting.
Yes, that is awesome. Well, great. That sounds like an interesting journey. And you know, maybe this season of this podcast is almost over. So maybe next season I'll have you back tell us about Substack.
I would love that. Yeah, I think there's so many different opportunities nowadays to even make money as a writer without being published by a publisher. I mean, Substack allows you to charge people if you want to. Right now, because I'm trying to push people in a very gentle, loving way, I hope, to pre-order the book, because pre-orders are now like one of the most important things that an author and a publisher have going for them before the book actually hits the bookstores. My book comes out September 19th, but we already have pre-orders and have been pushing those for a couple of weeks. And that's one of the things I keep telling people, if you're going to buy the book, please order it now, because that really helps us to get exposure. And when I come back next time, I'll be able to tell you, yeah, Honeymoon at Sea, you know, debuted with this kind of, you know, pre-orders. Well, I don't know that yet, but hopefully, you know, I'll have a good story to tell about all of our pushing, you know, on all different, what's the phrase, keep an equal strain on all parts to try and get things moving in a marketing way. And then, of course, once the book is out, I'll be doing events and book signings.
Well, thank you so much. This has been a gold mine. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Lisa. I really appreciate you inviting me. And I will look forward to coming back again when Honeymoon at Sea is out.